No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. We have a special guest tonight, so if you have a great question and you want to Skype it to us, please do, or you can call in at 888-627-6008. And tonight, we have Dr. Alan Lichtman with us. And Professor Lichtman has published 11 books and has published several hundred popular scholarly articles. He's lectured in the U.S. and internationally and provided commentary for major U.S. and foreign networks and leading newspapers and magazines around the world. He's been called one of the 100 most influential geopolitical experts in the world. They call him the Nostradamus of politics, the Oracle of American University. He's predicted the last 10 out of 11 presidential elections. He's amazing, and he's with us tonight. Thanks so much, Dr. Lichtman, for being on the phone with us.
My great pleasure. Happy to be with you.
Well, let me ask you first and foremost, you know, at first I was scared to have you. I was like, oh my God, what if he says the guy I'm not rooting for? But I know who you picked. So let's tell our audience, what's your prediction for November?
Yeah, keep in mind, my predictions are predictions, not endorsements. I've predicted the two most conservative presidents of our time, Ronald Reagan and Donald Trump, and liberals like Barack Obama. So here it goes. According to the 13 keys to the White House, which have been right since 1984, and which gauge the strength and performance of the White House party, not punditry and polling, we are going to have a new and unprecedented president. Kamala Harris will become the first woman president, cracking, if not shattering, the glass ceiling, Michael, and become the first president of mixed African and Asian descent, kind of foreshadowing where America is going. We are rapidly becoming a majority-minority country. Old white guys like me are on the decline.
I know. I feel the pressure every day for us old white guys. My daughters say that to me all the time, you know, even though I'm elected. They say to me, we don't need another old white guy in the White House, Dad. So let me tell you, because you've been in politics, I started in politics with Jimmy Carter, and you've been in politics even longer than I have. Do you agree with me that Joe Biden did the most unprecedented thing I've ever seen a politician do? I really think it was a magnanimous offer for him to step down. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. We've had sitting presidents step down before, but very, very rarely. It almost never happens.
Yeah.
And it's never happened this late on the eve of the convention when the sitting president had already garnered 85% of the vote in the primaries and caucuses. Got to go all the way back to 1968 in the middle of the horrific Vietnam War, which you and I remember pretty well. Lyndon Johnson withdrew, but that's before, long before, you know, the primaries really got rolling. And then before that, you got to go all the way back to 1952 when Harry Truman withdrew, long before the nomination process began. So Joe Biden really has done something without precedent and was truly a selfless move, not just for his own party, but for America.
Yeah, and it's actually, you know, it's actually borne fruit, hasn't it? I was a superdelegate to the convention, the energy there. This was my 13th consecutive Democratic convention, Dr. Lichtman, and I never saw so much energy in the room. So, yeah, he really, really did a positive thing. But you know what? I know you don't look at the polls. The rest of us have gone down that rabbit hole, haven't we? I mean, if I don't see 10 polls a day, I don't see one. And five of them say that Harris is ahead, and five of them say that Trump is ahead. And, you know, it's just so hard to figure them all out. But everybody's talking about an October surprise, except for Dr. Lichtman, who says there will be no October surprise.
That's right. The biggest myth in American politics is the October surprise. For 40 years, I've always made my predictions before that and never changed them. What's the biggest October surprise really in our lifetime? The Access Hollywood tape. We had never before seen something as horrific as a major party presidential candidate bragging on tape that he sexually assaults women. All the pundits were saying he's finished, he's done, no one can recover from this October surprise. And I didn't change my prediction of a Trump win because I don't alter it in response to events. And as you know, picking Trump hardly made me popular in 90% plus Democratic D.C., where I teach at American University.
I took
a lot of heat.
Yeah. You know that we only have like six Republicans in the whole District of Columbia, and we track their we have one of those ankle bracelets on them so we can track their movements around the city. But yeah, that was a very, very gutsy thing to do. Because that's a lot of pressure. And of course, when you were right, I think everybody said, oh my God, this guy really knows what he's doing.
I've been right for a long time.
You've been right for a long time. You really have. And I just find it amazing. The one thing that gets me, Dr. Lichtman, that you said recently in a New York Times article, and you've said it many times, is that it's about governance, not campaigning. And that's what I do. I'm a campaigner. I've worked on five presidential campaigns. And Harris has already raised $1 billion, $1 billion. I mean, when I worked for Carter, it was like $200 million for the whole election on both sides. But she's raised $1 billion so far. So why do we spend so much if it's really about governance?
Yeah. I've been screaming for years, not that we should stop campaigning, because that would change the pattern of history. I'm not recommending that. And if you saw my video, I also strongly recommend people need to get out and vote. They just can't take my prediction and, you know, go home. But I've been suggesting for 40 years, and, you know, the powers that be don't listen, that we could have a different kind of campaign, if in fact it's governance, not the traditional campaigning that counts. Remember, based on traditional campaigning, Hillary Clinton should have won in a landslide. She won all the debates. She raised more money. She had more ads. She was more experienced, etc. So what kind of campaign could we have? You know, this is my pipe dream. I'm 77. I'm still dreaming it. A campaign focused on vision and substance. That way, if you win, you have a mandate to govern for the next 4 years and help your party in the next election. And if you lose, at least you will have made a mark on your nation. You will have influenced something and not just be a footnote to history.
Well, I mean, I'm with you on that. That would be a dream of mine, too. And you know, I wonder when I hear all this polling, and I know what an exceptional political scientist you are, so I'd like your opinion. But what about the fact that polls, you know, basically we're talking about likely voters, and we know that likely voters are that's based on how many times you've voted in the past several elections. So is there a chance that people will be motivated to come out this time who haven't come out in the past? Or that new voters?
Yes.
I don't know that new voters are included in those polls too, newly registered voters. But So that could drastically affect the polls, could it
not?
Let
me talk about the polls, because I know a lot about them, being, as you say, an expert in politics.
You are. Please.
Back, and I remember this, you don't, Kennedy. Nixon actually saw Kennedy when I was 13 in New York City, and talk about his charisma is not overstated. He blew us away. We were kids. We didn't know anything. So back then, we had a poll once every couple of weeks, and nobody cared. Now we have a poll every hour, and the media treats it like, oh, my God, this is a big turn in the election, when it's all noise. Here's why. As you know, the pollsters tell you the error margin is plus and minus 3%, right? That's pure statistical error. That's the error you would get if you had a huge jar of green and red balls and you pulled out a sample to estimate the percentage of green and red balls in the jar. But human beings are not green and red balls. They don't respond to pollsters. They may lie. The election is not being held today, so they're going to change their minds. And you talk about likely voters. As you say, that's a guess based on past patterns, and past patterns always change. And that additional error is even larger than the plus and minus 3%. And unlike statistical error, it's not random, it's unidirectional. So in 2016, the polls underestimated, and maybe in 2020, Republican voting strength. So like generals fighting the last war, they've tried to adjust, and now based on what happened in 2022 through 2024, the polls are underestimating Democratic voting strength. My iconic example is by far the most prominent special election in 2024, the New York State congressional election for the seat previously held by the disgraced and expelled George Santos. A swing district, Santos, a Republican, had won it. A poll taken right in the eve of the election had it as a dead heat. The Democrat ahead by an insignificant 1 point. The Democrat won by 8 points, outpolling the polls by 7 points. And that was not anomalous. So don't assume that the polls, you know, are going to accurately depict the voting strength of the two parties.
And should there be some limit to them? Should we say, for example, I mean, because do they depress voting, you think? If everybody's hearing that Trump's ahead, Trump's ahead, Trump's ahead, do Kamala voters stay home?
I haven't seen any evidence of that. But I have raised the proposition that I think would help us move towards our more idealistic politics. I've nothing against the pollsters. It's not them. It's inherent to polling. So what I've suggested is my buddies, the pollsters, we send them off for the entirety of the election year on a vacation to a very wonderful tropical island in the far Pacific.
Well, yeah, but wouldn't they kill each other? wouldn't that be like, what's the TV show where Survivor?
Survivor, yeah.
You'd have a great episode of Survivor in that, I think.
Wouldn't it be
fun? But that's a hell of an idea. But let me ask you something. There are some, you know, some things that stick out to me in this prediction. And one is that every Democratic vice presidential candidate that's run for office, with the exception of Joe Biden, since I've been in politics, since 1980, has lost. Mondale lost, Dukakis lost, Gore lost on the Democratic side.
Dukakis was not a vice president. He was a governor.
Oh, you're right. He was a governor. I'm sorry.
So it's only Mondale.
Yeah, Mondale and Gore. You rightfully.
Well, Gore lost.
that election was stolen. That was just the strangest thing. The
no
whole
doubt
Florida Chad but, thing. And,
yeah. I wouldn't make too much of a tiny sample like that, because I predicted all those elections having nothing to do with the vice president. So I wouldn't worry about it.
What about the fact that she's a woman? And we've only had one other woman run, and who was so overqualified. Let me tell you, Dr. Lichtman, the only good thing that happened with Trump getting elected is that my family never asked for my political opinion after that, because I said I said to them, I said, it's ridiculous. Who's going to vote for this buffoon? Nobody's going to vote for him.
You know, I can't, no one can know. No way of knowing. But if anything, it might be an advantage. Here's why. There is the biggest gender gap. If you believe the polls, and they probably are accurate, not necessarily in who's going to win or who's going to lose, but the gender gap. We know there's a big gender gap, right? That women are much more likely to vote for Harris and men are more likely to vote for Trump. But the hidden thing that pollsters don't tell you is it is likely that women will be 53% to 55% of the electorate. So the gender gap does not cancel out. It heavily favors Harris.
And I would only add to that, that recent polls show that the number one issue is abortion. So it's at the top of the agenda for normally it's the economy so that's amazing. And I can tell you that I have two daughters who are both fired up to get out there and get people to vote because of this issue. So, let's hope women, you know, I spent a long time training candidates that want to run for political office, and everything that Donald Trump did, we tell them not to do. I mean, when we train them, we say, don't piss off the press. Nobody pisses off the press, right? Don't aggravate women. And I can tell you that my mother was a Republican precinct chairman. And after that Hollywood, tape with where he bragged about molesting women, she wouldn't have voted for him if God came down and told her to vote for him. So, you know, it just amazes me that he seems to break all the rules, and we're still pretty much divided, no matter how you look at it, right? Right down the middle in our country.
Well, not according to Mike, but it's amazing how much support he has. And I've been, you know, everyone in the press, they're my buddies. I've been talking to them for over 50 years, but they've been pretty shameful. They're treating this as if it were a normal election, that we should care that Harris's economic plan is not as specific as it could be. And you know as well as I, once you get into office, your plans are going to fundamentally change anyway, right? You got to deal with Congress and the interest groups. And that seems to be treated on the same level as a candidate who is absolutely deranged in the gibberish that he talks about, stokes violence, says he's going to run a revenge presidency if he wins, said he's going to be a dictator on day one to drill, drill, drill. Essentially destroy our environment, and no dictator who's been a dictator on day one has ever given it up. His buddy is Viktor Orban, who snuffed out the opposition in the free press. Why isn't the hair on fire of the press? They seem to have devoted more fire to the fact that Joe Biden stumbled in a debate than that Donald Trump is poised, if he wins, to destroy our democracy. I don't get it.
I don't either, except that I know that these people are starved for news. You know, there's so many news channels, and there's so, you know, the news cycle now is 24 hours, and they're always looking for some story of some sort.
And Trump brings ratings, I get that.
Yeah.
All right, are we about done, or you have more?
I have a little more, if you don't mind hanging with me, because you've written so many books about civil rights, and you know, or you've done so much work on civil rights and voting rights. And as you know, my job here in D.C. is to get a vote for the District of Columbia, because we have no voting representation in Congress. So we gave up a deal on voting rights a few years back when we had the D.C. Voting Rights Act, which would have given Eleanor Holmes Norton or given somebody in the district a vote. We gave it up in for statehood. Do you think we made the right move there? Should we have capitulated and taken what we could get? Or do you think it's right, since statehood is the only thing that really makes us whole?
In principle, you're absolutely right. You should have statehood. You should not be, you know, the little orphan Annie outcast of our politics, but Republicans will never give an inch on statehood. So practical politics would suggest maybe you should get what you can. But, you know, this is a classic example of, you know, do you compromise principle for expediency or not? I can't advise you on that.
Well, let me then ask you one last question.
Sure.
You wrote a book called FDR and the Jews.
I did.
What we see now going on in Gaza, are we responsible for what's happened in Palestine, in the sense that along with the French and the English, we kind of shut Jews out after the Second World War, and we're happy to give them their own homeland, which kind of started this whole thing, didn't it? The Palestine Mandate of 1949. Are we partially responsible for this? That's the first part of the question.
Absolutely not. You know, FDR was dying in February 1945. He died a couple of months later. He went to the most arduous place, one of the most arduous places to get to in the world. I don't know if you've been there. The LaGuardia Palace.
No, I have.
And Yalta in the Crimea. He dealt with, you know, one of the world's bloodiest, most brutal dictators, Stalin. He was dying. Instead of going home, almost nobody knows this, he went to the Suez to meet with the leader of the Arab world, King Ibn Saud of Saudi Arabia, with one purpose: to say, look, there's this little sliver of land. Let the Jews have it. You know, they have been persecuted for thousands of years. This is their chance. And in return, you have 100 times more land. You don't need that land. We will make your deserts blue. We will give you so much aid that this will be so beneficial to you. And Ibn Saud said, not on your life. The Jews are our blood enemy. We're not accepting anything. You know, and as long as each side views the other side as their blood enemy, sadly, I don't see an easy out to this. And another great president, Dwight Eisenhower, a man who saw war, said, nothing gets solved in the Middle East until we solve Israel-Palestine, and there is no military solution. And Hamas on the one hand and Netanyahu on the other hand ignore that wisdom.
Yeah, it's a terrible situation, isn't it?
Horrible.
And when you look at the political conflict, you know, you can read about some of it in the Bible. You know, it goes back 2,000 years, but and they're all of the same. They're all Semites, right? It's really hard,
Semites.
I think,
for an
outsider to understand this, and it is so sad. But I'm going to let you go, Dr. Lichtman, because I know you got a lot of important things to do, and I appreciate you taking time with us tonight. And I hope you come back again. This is your second time on the show, and I'm really honored because, as I told you before we started, I'm a big fan of yours. Been a fan
since I was in
graduate school 100 years ago. I think we didn't have cell phones. We didn't have you know what? We communicated every day by reading the personal ads in the school newspaper, and that was the extent of our social media in those days. But thanks again. I hope you're right. I hope I could call you on November 6th and say, God bless you, Dr. Lichtman. You're still the champion of prediction. So thanks so much.
You know where to find me.
All right, I do.
Send me a link.
Okay.
Take care.
Alan Lichtman, Harvard graduate and oracle of politics, thank you so much.
Say one more thing?
Yeah, please.
Catch me on my live show if you want to follow my analysis.
Oh yeah, please go ahead.
Yeah,
every
live show with my son every Tuesday and Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern at Alan Lichtman YouTube. That's AllanLichtman YouTube. We started with nothing. We now have 120,000 subscribers. So check it out.
Well, actually, you have 121,000 subscribers because I'm going to watch it for sure. And I hope other people will. And we'll post the information on our website.
Dr. Lichtman. Take care.
Okay. Thank you. Well, that was Dr. Alan Lichtman, and we still have time on our show. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about my feeling about the upcoming election, because I think this is important. I've got a lot of experience in politics. I've been in politics for 45 years, started working for Jimmy Carter, who, by the way, I should say, just had his 100th birthday. So happy birthday, Mr. President. It was an honor for me to work with you. But let's talk a little bit about the election. First of all, Dr. Lichtman, we didn't have time to talk about this because he's very busy right now. But we didn't have time to talk about his 13 keys. And I want to go over some of them with you. His first key is party mandate. He says after the midterm elections, if the party, if your party has won more seats in the House of Representatives, the party of power, that's one positive in the in his 13 keys. But unfortunately, Democrats have lost seats in the 2022 election in the House of Representatives. So I'm not sure about that one. Another one that gives me pause is that an incumbent seeking re-election has an advantage in his 13 keys. She's really not the incumbent, is she? I mean, we're trying to make her the incumbent, Vice President Kamala Harris. They're blaming her for everything they think that the Biden administration did. But in fact, she was not the incumbent. She became the nominee, because President Biden stepped down. The economy is not in recession during the election campaign. That's another key. But again, the economy is not in recession. It's come out of the recession. Stock market's doing great. Unemployment's coming down. Interest rates are coming down. But the perception out there is that the economy is having problems. So I don't know exactly how that can affect the 13 keys, and I hope it doesn't. But, you know, for most people, the price of gas and the price of bread is actually what determines how the economy is doing according to the average person on the street. They don't have money in the stock market. They don't, they don't follow those things. They go to the grocery stores, things cost more. They go to fill up the car, it costs them $60 or $70, And I feel this. I feel it. When I was a teenager, many teenage boys in America who needed jobs like I did, I was an orphan, pumped gas for a living. And when I pumped gas, it was 28 cents a gallon. So when I'm at the pump and I'm spending $4 a gallon, I really, really, really feel the pain. And I know that other people do too. So even though the economy is not in recession, I'm not sure that that's not the perception with a lot of people. And certainly the Trump administration, the Trump campaign, rather, which lies about everything, is lying and pushing falsehoods about the economy and everything else. So people believe it. I don't think that people go out and look for information. I think that what they seek, especially on the internet, is validation for the way they already feel. So if you feel like the economy is doing bad, then you're not going to listen to anybody telling you that it's not. You're only going to listen to the people that are telling you that it is. And very often, those people are just as plentiful as people that have an opposite opinion. And now that we can go down these rabbit holes and you can listen to Newsmax or one of these right-wing podcasters or listen to Fox News, you can, if that's the only place you're getting your information, then you don't know any better. And that I think may be a real problem. I also have a question about his 10th point, which is the incumbent administration suffers no major failure in foreign or military affairs. Now, I think that's true of the Biden-Harris administration. But I think what's going on in Israel and Gaza right now has many people upset, even young people upset. And I hope if you're out there and you're a young person listening and you believe in a free Palestine and you believe that, you know, Israel needs to change the policy that they've had after this horrible incursion by Hamas. If you believe those things, I hope you will also consider that Donald Trump will not make this better. He will not make it better because Donald Trump only cares about Donald Trump. So don't stay home because you're angry. Get out there and vote because it's important and our democracy is at stake here. And don't cut your nose off to spite your face, because I'll tell you what, I've been a Democrat for 50 years, more than 50 years, 53 years now, and I've seen the Democrats cut their nose off to spite their face on more occasions than I'd like to remember. So make sure you don't do that. Make sure you go out and you vote for Kamala Harris, or you know, if she's not your candidate, make sure you don't vote for Donald Trump. Donald Trump doesn't care about America. Donald Trump doesn't care about you. All Donald Trump cares about is Donald Trump. So make sure you go out there, even if you're not feeling 100% like we're doing exactly what we should be doing. Because you know what? The Harris administration will listen to you. They'll hear your voices. Trump only hears his own voice. So don't go out there and the voices of the yes men that he surrounds himself with. I mean, I think the most poignant Harris commercial out there right now is the Harris commercial that shows his vice president, the highest ranking military officer in the United States military, his defense secretary, all these people who work for him that he handpicked, saying that he's not qualified, that he's dangerous, and that we shouldn't elect him. I think that we need to listen to everybody that knows this man does not like him. You know, hello, wake up and smell the coffee, right? Where's he going to lose? He's going to lose in New York. He's a New Yorker. I mean, I know he's transplanted himself to Florida and, you know, these days. But you know what? He doesn't give a damn about Florida either. Look, you know, Taylor Swift is a billionaire. He's a billionaire. Taylor Swift has committed $10 million of her money to the victims of the most recent hurricanes. What's Donald Trump committed? Nothing. All he wants to do is blame somebody for it. That idiot, absolute idiot, Marjorie Taylor Greene in Georgia, is saying that Democrats control the weather. Well, Jimmy Kimmel said, I'm sorry, Bill Maher, I've been watching so many things lately, as Bill Maher said, wouldn't that be a reason to vote for the Democrats if you really thought they could control the weather? I'm telling you what, I would vote for the party that could control the weather. But this just shows you how off the rails these people are. There are people suffering right now in North Carolina, Americans suffering in North Carolina and Florida. And you know what? People from Washington, D.C., our first responders, first responders from all up and down the East Coast, maybe even further, are down there trying to help these people. They're trying to help them. Their neighbors are trying to help them. The government's trying to help them. And what's this man doing? He's out there spreading lies and trying to gain political points on their misery. I want to tell you, I've known a lot of people in politics, good people and bad people, but that's absolutely one of the most despicable things I've ever heard of, that this man would seed doubt in people's minds about what their futures are going to be and lie to them about the aid they're getting and try to make up political points out of a disaster like this. It's just horrible, and it shows you his character. Look, a leader has to have character. I know that there are people out there that like this man because they think he's going to throw a wrench in the works, that he's going to upset the political balance, and they don't like the way things are going. But you have to have character to be a leader. Nobody without character is a leader. And he shouldn't be. Look at the people he surrounds himself with. He surrounds himself with people like Elon Musk. Really? Do you want Elon Musk to be out there as Secretary of Commerce? You know, he's talking about appointing this man to a position of great importance in his administration. Really? Do we want that? I don't think so. You know, and when you use as a campaign slogan, "I am your retribution," let me tell you something. I've been a campaigner for more than 40 years. I've written many slogans for campaigns, but "I am your retribution" is not a campaign slogan. It's a threat. And that's what this man does. He threatens America. And he wants to scare people into voting for him. And that's not leadership. That's dictatorship. That's what dictators do. So they convince you that the world is coming to an end. And the only thing you can do is take some ridiculous radical action and put them in power. We've seen it over and over again. And Donald Trump is just another clear example of it. So go out there and vote. That's the most important thing. Vote. Vote to keep democracy in place. Vote to let women have control over their own bodies. Vote for leadership. Vote for change. Don't take us back. These guys want to take us back. You know, the Christian nationalists, I'm a Christian. It really bothers me that these people are out there talking about Christ when none of them have the slightest idea who Jesus Christ is, because Jesus Christ was not about retribution. And that's what they all seem to be about. But this is all about white America losing power. Look, we're a melting pot. This is our strength. We often take pride in saying it. So the idea that, take it from an old fat white guy, the idea that old fat white guys aren't going to have as much power as they had before is just a reality. You know, we see these people saying the most ridiculous things. Does anybody not realize what's just happened in Florida and North Carolina, what happened in Louisiana? These terrible storms, the fires that have plagued California, these terrible storms that keep occurring, that are more drastic and more frequent, that is a result of global warming. Nobody in science with half a brain doubts that is from, you know, the result of global warming. And what do these people say? Drill, baby, drill. Let's get more of that stuff out of the earth and put it into the atmosphere. You know, Donald Trump has said that he would get rid of electric cars. What? Everybody should be driving an electric car. You know, I'm not being sanctimonious here. I don't drive an electric car. My wife drives a hybrid, but we should all be driving electric cars. Solar power should be everywhere. You know, we're destroying the earth. That's just one thing. Then let's talk about guns. You know, they want everybody in America to be able to buy any gun they want. Well, you know what? I've owned guns in my life. I grew up around guns. I'm not afraid of guns. I'm afraid of the people that have them sometimes. You know, they don't want to ban AR-15 rifles. And Donald Trump, again, wants to make the most that he can possibly make out of the fact that there's been two assassination attempts on his life. Well, I would point out, which nobody seems to be doing right now, that both of those attempts were made with AR-15 style rifles. These are the rifles that they think that every nut should be able to get their hands on. In the Uvalde case, where that boy killed those babies, those children in a school, he only had an AR-15 style rifle because he was too young to have a handgun. What's wrong with the people of Texas that you have a law that you have to be an 18-year-old to buy a handgun, but you can buy an AR-15 rifle, style rifle? That's just crazy. And we need to change that. But they're out pushing that. They're out pushing more no restrictions against guns and no abortion for women and let's drill, baby, drill. These are all policies that are going to hurt America in the long run. And we need to realize that. Kamala Harris, on the other hand, is talking about leadership. She's talking about taking America in a new direction, the direction that we need to go. And I know so many people are afraid of this. And that's, look, I'm a student of political science. I have a master's degree in political science. So I understand. I understand why people are reticent to change. It's scary. The most conservative people in any society are the wealthiest and the poorest because neither one of them wants change. The wealthiest don't want change because they're afraid they'll lose their wealth and power. And that's what's going on now in the Republican Party. And the poorest people don't want change because they're afraid any change will push them further down. They know they're just barely making it and they want to keep on making it. So they're also afraid of change. And I understand that. But change is needed. The world is changing. And we need to change with it. No longer can we be isolationists. Trump and J.D. Vance don't even get me started on him, are isolationists. We can't be isolationists in this world. There's no way, for example, that any one country can solve the problem of a global climate change. We all have to work together for that. You know, you may say that you don't want a world economy, but too bad. That's what we have. We have a world economy. And look at this guy. He doesn't want to, he wants to be isolationist, but yet he's out there with his newest business adventure, cryptocurrency, right? He wants a worldwide universal currency, but he doesn't want to deal with the world economically on any other basis other than to be a bully with countries like China and the Soviet Union, which is a joke, right? It's a joke that he would bully Vladimir Putin. He and Putin are buddies. He talked to him 7 times since he's left office. He sent him supplies that Americans couldn't get their hands on. This is crazy, America. This should not be that close. And this is finally what I want to talk to you all about. The fact that it's this close needs to give us pause, and we all need to think about what's going to happen on November 6th. After the election, no matter who wins, excuse me, I'm getting hoarse, no matter who wins, we're going to have half the country disappointed. Excuse me. And we're going to have to deal with that. So that's what we all have to think about. What happens after the election? First, let's get this done. Then let's find ways to make America heal. Well, I'm going to leave a little early tonight because I'm starting to get hoarse, and that's no good for anybody. We so much liked having Alan Lichtman on the show. I did. And also being able to express my opinion tonight. And I hope you'll keep listening. We're going to have another fascinating guest next week. And I hope you'll tune in. And please, don't just vote. Call your mother. Call your friends. Call your grandma. Call the mailman. Whoever you can reach out to. And get them to vote. This is without a doubt, in the 50 years I've been in politics, the single most election. So let's go out there and vote. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you, Dr. Lichtman. Excuse me. As you know, we end every show with a song. And when you have a great political scientist like Dr. Lichtman on the show, and you've got an old political hack like me as a commentator, there's only one song I could play, and that's we play the show out each week with a song, and I dedicate this to Dr. Lichtman. But there's only one song that I could possibly play, and this song was written by a notorious political character who was kind of a benevolent despot. His name was Huey Long. He was a senator from Louisiana who was assassinated on the floor of the Senate. And this was a campaign song that he actually wrote. And it's called Every Man a King. So here is Every Man a King, written by Huey Long. Everybody have a great week. And we'll talk to you next week. Thanks for listening.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.